offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari Shankar. Those of you who follow our program regularly will know that we go through the 1991 summer course series in this segment of Thursday Live. We are in the seventh discourse. Swami is speaking about the Upanishads and the essence of Upanishads in this series. The sixth discourse was about the Prashnopanishad. The seventh one is a continuation of that discourse on Prashnopanishad. We have, fairly right in the middle of that discourse. So, offering our loving pranams to Swami, we begin this week's Sai Ram Hari.
Sai Ram Prem.
We had the fortune of having the company of Pradeep sir for 2 weeks, which was quite helpful, but the intensity of this discourse has not yet come down, I would say.
Yeah.
Because the way Swami has explained, especially the creation part, because I think that's one thing where always there's a lot of debate. Right. In fact, I think a couple of weeks back there was a listener who sent us a question. And he said, let's say that I am a scientist who is creating a robo. So I create the intelligence the robo has to have. I decide how much the robo should know and what it should do and when it has to do in different situations. So when I create a robo like that, how is it possible that the robo will start behaving in a manner which is not programmed into it?
Right.
So we're saying similarly, human beings, when God is created, where did they go astray?
Yeah.
Because after all, they've been created by God and been... I think, in a sense, the way Swami answered it, Swami spoke of it the last week, was a very beautiful answer for that. Because, we don't ask this question, the way the question was asked itself was with reference to robotics. It was not asked with reference to a child being born to a mother. Right? Because there we accept that there is change in that new individual which is born. We don't wonder why is the child different when the mother is so noble.
Yeah.
Or why is it the child has different... responds differently to different situations, though the parents are in, respond in a certain manner. So I think in a sense Swami hinted that when this, he was talking about this prana prani concept. He said it all started by God creating man with a certain amount of will. I think that's what Swami hinted at.
Yes,
that, you know, he's saying that it's almost like a seed coming out from a tree. Even as I was going through that, there are two ways of looking at it. You know, one way is to look at it and say, you know, this is how creation came about. First man came from God and then the you know, proliferation happened. But the other way of looking at it is probably, you know, to think of this seed as the will itself. That seed as a choice itself. How that one choice gives result to many choices that you make. And it becomes a very complex you know, concept of will itself.
Yeah.
Where it...
Determinism of free will, you know, some... Like, I was just thinking that when God... I mean, if you want to take this analogy called God created man in his own image.
Right.
And so robot also is programmed. So that is according to... I just wanted to, you know, almost move over to the computer programming side.
Okay.
But that is according to the present paradigm of computing, where we do not including learning as a possibility.
Intelligence of learning is not...
It is the human brain or human learning is not limited by, you know, what is existing. Like, to give you an example, there is a famous thought experiment where, like, supposing you and I trade our brains, you know, like I, so to speak, I move into you and you move into me, like our brains are exchanged. So, from now on, will people interact? So, when they interact with me, are they going to interact with Premanush the whole time? Right? So, that is one thought experiment. But there are different answers to that. One is a definite yes, because the brain is equal to Premanush. There is a set of all. But what happens is, the future, like if you look at 5 years from now, the Premanush that exists is a different Premanush altogether. Because the set of experiences that take place in between, the response to that. So it's a continually evolving this thing. And it also involves some amount of judgment on good and evil.
Right.
right? When you say, like, will God do, I mean, why will God sanction this, for example, like what a human being does? But I think the best reconciliation that I have for this is, it is a challenge that every human being has taken upon. Right? When you enter the human body, the human body, as Swami himself has said, there is Dehabhimanam. The moment you enter, Swami has said, the moment you have a body, Dehabhimanam automatically arises. The feeling of identification with the body, comes automatic. It's inescapable. And with it comes everything else.
Right.
The, you know, the quest for survival. Last time we were discussing that when we experience ourselves as differentiated from the rest of the universe, the first emotion that arises, according to the Vedas, is the primal emotion of fear.
Fear, right.
And that fear, as we know, it arises deep in the limbic part of the brain, what is called the lizard brain. And that drives a lot of our actions, whether we know it or not.
Very true.
And so then the challenge is, like, when our guru or the avatar reminds us of our divine nature, whether we can start acting consistent with that instead of being consistent with the like an animal existence.
Right.
I think that is the challenge. So it's, we cannot say, you know, it is like a robot, God has told you act like this, and so why we are not acting the same way.
Yeah, I think that is the only blockade in our way of looking at the whole thing. Because, I mean, Swami is clearly saying here that God created man and created a certain amount of will, because Swami was saying that, you know, the creation, sustenance and destructions are not solely God's will, but human effort also matters to a certain extent.
Yes.
So I think within the bigger scheme of God's will, Swami is saying that, and of course, the most beautiful statement that Swami made in that clip which we played last time is, since people see diversity in this manifestation of God's will, they see it as finite. And the moment you see it as finite, you want to see where it began and how it will end.
Yeah.
Right? That's how it comes. Like you say that some people start making wrong decisions, some people remain noble.
Yeah.
So then the question comes of, you know, why some go astray when they... I mean, I've also had this doubt so much and debated so much in my head. Of course, there's no answer, but you always ask, you always try to go to the beginning of the thing. And so beautifully Swami is saying that that idea that this is finite comes from the fact that you think that God's will is finite. Right? And then Swami says that stop worrying about going back to the future. You know, if you have a seed, there is no way you can ascertain who's the grandfather, father, the great-grandfather and all of that. But you know how to put an end to that cycle that that seed is capable of going into. Swami says, just put it in your mouth and chew, and that's the end of it. And then Swami says that that is the lesson that Pipalada gives. He said, yes, there is an endless cycle of birth and death. There is no way you can go back to the source and find out where it all began. But the ability to put an end to it is in each one of your hands. Right, that's one of the I think main messages in that previous clip.
Yeah, it's the best I think resolution of the whole conflict in itself.
Because I remember once speaking to an elder and asking this very question, you know, how did it all begin and all that, and he said very clearly, he said, it, see, you thinking of this, if it gives you clarity, you can think of it, but it's only going to give you confusion. But if you say that, okay, this is the situation, what is the way forward, he said, that will help you better than to intellectually try to see where it all began and how it all started, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah, I think that's a good utilitarian view of the argument. Right. And it's almost leading up to the crux of the matter that Swami deals with in the segment that we're going to discuss today. And a lot of it, as you said, it has to do with the fact, as we've spoken earlier, that God has imbued every human being with the power of discrimination.
Right.
As you are saying, if, like, there are, like, for every stimulus that the environment provides, there are a number of responses that I can give. Right. And the kind of response that I choose right now, right, that determines who I become later.
Right.
Like, it's a continuous evolution. Right. And taking a choice at this time will take me down one path. And if I take a choice at this time, it takes me down another path.
Right.
It's a, you know, continually evolving.
In fact, one more theory which I generally hear is, you know, imagine the entire, I've heard a lot of even spiritual people giving this as in theory, saying that imagine the whole human experience as you see it in the world is like an experiment that God is doing. Okay. And yes, everybody was created equal. Everybody was created with equal amount of nobility and discrimination. But the whole experience is to show that how everything depends on the choices you make and the response that you put out to the stimuli, as you're saying, which comes from outside. So it says that though everything starts from the same point, just by those differences, small differences, it's not big differences, small differences in the choices made, the paths diverge so much.
I, you know, recall reading some time ago when you were talking of choices. Now this is, this involves regression, you know. It is whether now I'm not going to go into whether that's like established or not, but just the what was described in that particular book. So this so there is a lady. Just to give you the entire perspective, the lady goes to this hypnotist with a problem that she is experiencing continual pain, like chronic pain in her shins,
okay,
in her leg, and she's been to a number of doctors who are not able to diagnose what happened. Somebody pointed out that there is this, you know, hypnotic therapy. They'll go to the source of what happened. So through the regression, the patient, I mean the that lady, she comes to see of an event that happened in a previous birth.
Okay.
Right. Let me again say that all this is I'm
subject to. Let's assume that it's all true.
I just want to take away the main lesson from you know what was put out there. But so this lady says that you know what had happened in the previous birth was she a little girl, she's sitting in a carriage and horse-driven carriage. And she's playing with the door handle. At some point of time, the door actually, you know, unlocks. It opens. Okay. She falls out of the carriage and the wheel of the carriage drives over her leg. And so she's like invalid for the rest of her life. Right? And the hypnotist does one very interesting thing. He comments over there that although this is the mind of a child, it appears to be a child, the mind is yet some, you know, it has the, it is always, it is timeless.
Right.
Right? And it is mature, in fact. So he can ask the mind, what was it thinking at that time? The child as a, you know, maybe may have been playing with the handle like every child does.
Right.
Right. But he could ask them, he asks, you know, like what was your mind thinking at that time? And the answer is very astonishing. The mind is aware that there is something that needs to be done. That you have to open the handle and you have to fall out of the of the carriage. Right. But at that moment, there is an intense argument going on. Should I do it? Should I not do it? Should I do it? Should I not do it?
Okay.
And finally, the mind decides, yes, this is the path that we have chosen and I will do it. So it seems like that, you know, at that part of the timeline, so to speak, that patient had the choice whether to go through that experience of falling out of the carriage or not. That was the lesson that this doctor, you know, derived through that session. Saying that we do have a choice. You know, we can debate whether to go ahead with, you know, that fork in the path or not. But, so that, I think, like, it kind of resonates with what Swami was saying in this discourse, you know. Like, as you mentioned, that, you know, it is, to some extent, human effort also matters. There seems to be, like, some degree of, you know, freedom in this.
Yeah, that's what, there's one beautiful explanation I once heard, the difference between Arjuna's stand and Duryodhana's stand. We know that Swami also quotes that shloka which Duryodhana says that I know what is right, I know what is wrong, but I don't have the ability to follow it. Right? And they say that it was the same state which Arjuna was in. Right? So he says that I can intellectually understand whatever you're saying, I know what is right and what is wrong. I don't have the ability. In fact, that is one of the questions that he asks Krishna during that Bhagavad Gita exchange. And then apparently Krishna says in that thing that yes, most of your actions are being driven by your sanskaras or you know, your past actions and choices. But there is a small window in every moment where you actually have the ability to make a different choice. As you're saying that, you know, there's something which is partly destined or partly planned or whatever it is. You know, maybe your past actions or maybe divine will, I mean, let's not go into that. But even there, every moment there is a small window of choice, and that is where the individual is actually empowered. So he's saying that the worst person you may be, Krishna says that you have the choice to transform at that moment.
Right.
But it's just that when you give up many moments in that, in a sequence of time, that's when you get more and more driven away from your ability to make that choice.
Yes, otherwise, you know, it would be the same samskaras just getting, you know, sedimented
good
again and again.
Good and bad will remain bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, it stands to logic, though of course many of these things are beyond logic, but it stands to logic that we must be having the ability to, you know, work away, cut away the sediments and put something better in place.
And, the other very beautiful point that Swami made was that analogy of the paddy covered with husk and paddy that becomes the rice. Swami said that as long as there is husk on the paddy, you can always sow that paddy again, and you know, by watering you can, it will lead to another cycle of birth and death. He says, but the moment you remove the husk, and it doesn't, you know, give forth life anymore.
Yeah.
And Swami said, similarly, it's human life is like that. The husk is like desire. As long as there is desire attached to the individual, then there is punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. The moment you remove the husk of desire, you become like that rice, and your death is inevitable, but rebirth can be stopped.
Yes.
You know, that's the beautiful point that Swami makes.
I was recalling, you know, what a couple of months back, one of my classmates from school, he was not a devotee, but he just came to visit me at Prashantiniyam after a very long time. So as he was driving down, you know, the main road here, he was just looking at all the various, you know, signs, signboards, the thought for the day boards that are there, quotation boards, I'm sorry. So he looked at one of them, and he was very impacted by what was written there, that he couldn't forget it. You know, the whole day he was asking about that. I remember what Swami had said is, it's a very famous one, that man minus desire equals God, and God plus desire equals man.
Right.
So that, he was thinking about it, ruminating the whole day. But precisely this Swami is saying, you know, you remove the husk of desire, what remains is the, you know, original, the principle, you know, the God principle, which is present everywhere, doesn't get individualized. Again and again.
And of course, this whole discussion is within that concept of what Swami is speaking about, the how the one became many.
Yeah.
The whole thing is a result of the working of the prana and the prani together. Right? And that's what Swami says. In the very beginning, there was only the prani and the prana. I mean, after the creation of the second.
Yeah.
That's why I think you had mentioned that point. We always refer to duality in when we're talking about Vedanta.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. The manifest and the unmanifest, the subtle and the based, and everything is in duality. And Swami says that that's how it all began, because that's where the problem comes. You know, the choices come after that.
Right.
Because in the human, this one, otherwise you're either choosing against yourself or the world.
Yeah.
And then Swami says that how this is actually what you call Dakshinayanam. Because the more and more your actions and choices are based on your mind, you are moving towards the moon.
Yeah.
Because the moon is representative of the mind.
Mm.
And then the previous clip, I think the week before that we had played, Swami was talking about the relationship between the moon and the sun. And how the sun is the Hiranyagarbha, which is the Prajapati, which is the source of all life. Right? And that's how the connection comes in the Prashna Upanishad.
I think, like, we can go through what Swami has spoken about in the next segment.
Right.
And I think the ideas will all converge.
Right.
As we
right. So we'll go to the next clip in that discourse.
Yeah.
Tadupari, Moodava Shishyudu Praveshinchadu.
The third disciple entered the scene.
Guruvuku Namaskarinchi.
He offered salutations to the Guru.
Swami, ee jeevula lopala ye vidhamainatuvanti pranulu deenini rakshinchi పోషించి ఉద్ధరిస్తున్నవి.
ఇన్ దిస్ లివింగ్ బీయింగ్ హౌ విల్ దిస్ ప్రాణి బీయింగ్ లుక్డ్ ఆఫ్టర్ ఫాస్టర్ ప్రొటెక్టెడ్ అండ్ మేడ్ టు కంటిన్యూ ఇట్స్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్.
అతనే అశ్వరాయణుడు.
హిజ్ నేమ్ ఈస్ అశ్వరాయణ.
ఈ అశ్వరాయణుడు వచ్చి, స్వామి, ఈ జీవులకంత ప్రధానమైనటువంటి యొక్క జీవుడు ఎవరు?
హూ ఈస్ ది మోస్ట్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ బీయింగ్ అమంగ్ ఆల్ దీస్ బీయింగ్స్?
ఈ జీవులకు అనేక అంగములు ఉంటున్నవి.
దీస్ బీయింగ్స్ హ్యావ్ ఎ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ లింబ్స్.
అనేక అంగములు ఎందుకూడను సమత్వమైనటువంటి ఒక శక్తి ఏదో ఒకటి ఉంటున్నది.
దెర్ ఇస్ సమ్ పవర్ విచ్ ఇస్ యూనిఫార్మ్లీ స్ప్రెడ్ ఇన్ ఆల్ ద లింబ్స్.
శక్తి ఏమిటి అని ప్రశ్నించాడు.
వాట్ ఈస్ దట్ పవర్ స్వామి? హీ క్వశ్చన్.
నాయన, ఆకాశము నుండి వాయువు, తేజస్సు, జలము, భూమి ఇవి ఆవిర్భవిస్తున్నాయి.
చైల్డ్, ఫ్రమ్ ది ఈథర్ ద విండ్ ద ఫైర్ వాటర్ అండ్ ఎర్త్ ఎమనేట్.
వీటి యొక్క అంశములే వాక్కు, దృష్టి, శ్రవణము, మనస్సు.
These aspects of these five things are the word, the hearing, and the talk, and the mind.
ఈ నాలుగు కూడాను ప్రాణులను రక్షింపచేస్తున్నాయి.
These four are protecting this principle of life.
ఇందులో ప్రధానమైనటువంటిది సూర్యతత్వమైనటువంటి ప్రాణం.
Among these, the most important one is the principle of sun, that is
pranamae lekundina kannulu chudalevu, chevulu vinalevu, nooru maatadaledu, manasu tana pani tanu cheyaledu.
Without this principle of prana, eyes cannot see, ears cannot hear, tongue cannot utter, mind cannot think.
Kanuka anni angamulakante kudanu pradhanamainatundi pranamu.
Among all the limbs, the most important power is the power of life.
ఈ ప్రాణములకు నిలయమైనటువంటిది దేహము.
ది హౌస్ విచ్ హౌసెస్ దిస్ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఈస్ బాడీ.
కనుకనే దేహమనే దేవాలయమును ఆశ్రయించుకుని ప్రాణము జీవిస్తుంటుండాలి.
లైఫ్ ఈస్ కంటిన్యూయింగ్ ఇట్స్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్ విత్ ఇన్ ది టెంపుల్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ బాడీ.
దేహో దేవాలయ ప్రక్తో జీవో దేవ సనాతన. ఈ ప్రాణము సనాతనమైనటువంటిది.
దిస్ లైఫ్ ఈస్ బిగినింగ్ లెస్ అండ్ ఎండ్ లెస్ సనాతన.
ఈ నూతనమైన దేహమును ఒక భవనముగా ఆశ్రయించి ఉంటుండాలి.
ఇట్ టేక్స్ షెల్టర్ ఇన్ ది బాడీ విచ్ ఇస్ న్యూ.
ఈ దేహము లోపల,
ఇన్ దిస్ బాడీ,
సహస్ర నాడులు కేవలం వికసించి ఉపాంగముల చేత సర్వత్రా కూడాను వ్యాపించి ఉంటున్నాయి.
దేర్ ఆర్
శత సహస్రము,
దేర్ ఆర్ 100,000 నర్వ్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ స్ప్రెడింగ్ ది ఎంటైర్ బాడీ ఫ్రమ్ ది సెంటర్.
దేహం అంటే కేవలము సామాన్యమైనటువంటిది కాదు.
డు నాట్ కన్సిడర్ ది ఫిజికల్ బాడీ.
శత నాడముల చేత ఈ దేహము వ్యాపించి ఉంటుండాలి.
దేర్ ఆర్ 100,000 నర్వ్స్ ఇన్ దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ.
నిజముగా విచారణ చేసినప్పుడు 72 కోట్ల నాడలు ఉంటున్నాయి ఈ దేహములో.
ఇఫ్ ఓన్లీ యూ కేర్ఫుల్లీ ఎన్క్వైర్, దేర్ ఆర్ 72 crores ఆఫ్ నర్వ్స్ ఇన్ దిస్ బాడీ.
ఈ యొక్క 72 నాడములు ఎందుకూడను ధ్యాన అనే ప్రాణము సంచరిస్తూ ఉంటుండాలి.
దేర్ ఇస్ ది ధ్యాన విచ్ ఇస్ ఏ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ పర్వేడింగ్ ఆల్ ది 72 crore.
ఈ 72 కోట్ల నాడములు ఎందుకూడను ధ్యాన అనేటువంటి ప్రాణమేగలు లేకపోతే ఈ యొక్క నాడములు ఏమాత్రం కూడాను పనిచేయలేవు.
ఇఫ్ ది లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ కాల్డ్ ధ్యాన ఈజ్ నాట్ పర్వేడింగ్ ది 72 crore నర్వ్స్, then life will not exist at all.
Udana aneetundi pranamu pai choopulo untuntadi.
Udana principle of life is in the upper vision.
Adi nirantaram kudunu manavudu chesinatundi punya papa karmamulu puraskarinchukoni aaya sthanamulaku cherustuntadi udanam.
This principle of udana will be making man to go upward or downward on the basis of the actions performed by him.
కనుక మనం మన స్థానములంతా కూడాను మనము చేసేటువంటి కర్మల పైన ఆధారపడి ఉంటుంటాయి.
దేర్ ఫార్ వాట్ ఎవర్ స్టేట్ వీఆర్ ఎంజాయింగ్ డిపెండ్స్ అపాన్ ది యాక్షన్స్ పర్ఫార్మ్డ్ బై అస్.
కనుకనే కష్టములకు కృంగక, సుఖములకు పొంగక, సమత్వాన్ని భావించేటువంటి యొక్క నిత్యతత్వాన్ని మనం అనుసరించమని శాస్త్రములు ప్రబోధిస్తూ వస్తున్నాయి.
Therefore, scriptures have been teaching for us to enjoy a state of equanimity without getting bloated by the pressure.
కష్టములు ఎవరో మనకు అందించినటువంటివి కాదు.
Whatever difficulties you get are not given by
someone. ఎవరో మనకు సహాయం చేసి పెట్టినటువంటివి కాదు.
No one is conferring on you the joys of life.
కష్టములు సుఖములు కూడాను మనమే మూల కారణం.
For joys and sorrows we are basically responsible. ఏదో
బలహీనత చేత వారి వల్ల నాకు ఈ కష్టం కలిగింది, వారి వల్ల నాకు ఈ దుఃఖం సంభవించింది అని ఇతరులు నిమిత్త మాత్రంగా ఎన్నుకుంటున్నారే కాని ఇతరులు దీనికి ఎవరు కూడాను కారకులు కాదు.
ఇట్ ఈస్ అన్ అకౌంట్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమన్ వీక్నెస్. వన్ సేస్ సమ్వన్ హస్ గివెన్ హిమ్ జాయ్, సమ్వన్ ఎల్స్ హస్ గివెన్ హిమ్ సారో. నో వన్ ఇస్ ట్రూలీ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్
తన కష్ట సుఖములకు,
ఫర్ జాయ్ ఆర్ సారో,
తన నష్ట ఆదాయములకు,
ఫర్ ప్రాఫిట్ ఆర్ లాస్,
మానాభిమానములకు,
ఫర్ ఆనర్ ఆర్ డిజానర్,
కీర్తి గౌరవాలకు,
ఫర్ ఫేమ్ ఆర్ ఇల్ ఫేమ్.
మన సంకల్పములే మనకు మూల కారణం.
ఇట్ ఈస్ అవర్ థాట్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్.
మనం చేసినటువంటి కర్మలే మనకు దీనికి మూల కారణం.
అవర్ ఓన్ యాక్షన్స్ ఆర్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్ దట్.
పాపం అనగ వేరు, పరదేశము లేదు, తాను చేయు పనుల తగిలియుండు.
దేర్ ఇస్ నో సిన్ ఇన్ ఎ వరల్డ్ విచ్ ఇస్ సపరేట్. It is dependent upon the actions
you do. లేడు తాను చేయు పనుల తగిలియుండు.
God also doesn't exist in a separate world. He is in your own body based upon the actions which you perform.
కనుక మన మన యొక్క కర్మలను పురస్కరించుకొని మనము స్వర్గమో నరకమో మోక్షమో ఇంకే విధమైనటువంటి స్థానమో మనం చెందుతూ ఉంటున్నాం.
On the basis of our actions we go to heaven or hell and we enjoy or suffer.
దీనిని ఉదాన వాయువు అందిస్తూ ఉంటుండాలి.
ఇట్ ఇస్ ది లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ కాల్ ఉదాన విచ్ కన్ఫర్స్ ఆన్ యూ దిస్.
ప్రాణములు ఐదుగా విభజించారు.
దేర్ ఆర్ ఫైవ్ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్.
ప్రాణ, అపాన, సమాన, ఉదాన, వ్యాన.
దీస్ ఫైవ్ ఆర్ ప్రాణ, అపాన, సమాన, ఉదాన అండ్ వ్యాన.
ఇవి కేవలము మన దేహమునందు మాత్రమే కాకుండా బయట ప్రపంచంలో ఉండే పంచభూతములు ఎందుకు కూడాను ప్రత్యక్షముగా మనకు గోచరిస్తున్నాయి.
దీస్ ఫైవ్ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్స్ ఆర్ నాట్ మియర్లీ విత్ ఇన్ అవర్ బాడీ, దే ఆర్ ఆన్ ఇన్ ది ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ అవుట్ సైడ్ ఆల్సో.
సూర్యుని యందు ప్రాణవాయువు అనగా అదే ప్రాణ.
ఇన్ సన్ గాడ్ దేర్ ఇస్ దిస్ ప్రాణ, ది నేమ్ ఆఫ్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ ఇస్ ప్రాణ.
భూమి నుండి అపాన,
ఫ్రమ్ అర్త్ అపాన కమ్స్.
ఆకాశం నుండి సమాన,
ఫ్రమ్ ఈథర్ సమాన కమ్స్.
ఇంకా గాలి నుండి ఉదాన,
ఫ్రమ్ విండ్ ఉదాన కమ్స్.
అగ్ని నుండి వ్యాన,
ఫ్రమ్ ఫైర్ వ్యాన కమ్స్.
కనుక ఈ పంచభూతములు ఎందుకు ఒక్కొక్క ప్రాణం అంతర్భూతమై ఉంటుండాలి.
ఇన్ ఆల్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ ఫైవ్ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్స్ ఆర్ రన్నింగ్ అస్ అండర్ కరెంట్.
ఈ ప్రాణములకు కూడాను అతి సమీపంలో మానవుడు చేసిన మంచి చెడ్డల యొక్క ప్రతిబింబాలు కూడా ఉంటున్నాయి.
Along with these five life principles, the results of man's actions, good or bad, are also associated.
ఎవరు కూడా అంత సులభంగా చెప్పలేరు.
No one can explain the secrets of creation so easily.
ఇప్పుడు ఈ వస్తువులకు దానికి ప్రక్కనే ఒక నీడ వెంటాడుతుండాలి.
For this object, for example, there is a shadow following it closely.
అదే విధంగానే ప్రాణములకు మనము చేసినటువంటి మంచి చెడ్డల కర్మలనేటువంటిది షాడోగా వెంటాడుతుంటాడు.
సిమిలర్ ఈస్ ది యాక్షన్స్ మెరిటోరియస్ ఆర్ అదర్వైజ్ ఆర్ అకంపెనింగ్ ప్రాణ.
ప్రాణము ఎక్కడ పోతే అక్కడంతా దాని షాడో వస్తుంటాడు.
వేర్ ఎవర్ దిస్ ప్రాణ లైఫ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ గోస్ ఇట్ షాడో.
ఈ జన్మములో ఈ దేహములో ఉండినప్పుడు మనం చేసినటువంటి మంచి చెడ్డలంతా కూడాను దానికి తగిన ఫలమునిచ్చేటువంటి మరొక దేహానికి ఈ ప్రాణం పోయినప్పుడు ఇవన్నీ దానికి వెంటాడుతూనే ఉంటాయి.
వెన్ ది యాక్షన్స్ పర్ఫార్మ్ బై దిస్ ప్రాణ ఇన్ దిస్ బాడీ leave this body and enters another body, all these five principles
ee pranam ekkada pothundi.
How does this prana go?
ee dehamulo ye vidhamaina kunti manchi chettalu nee aacharinchitavo daniki taginatundi phalamunu andinchetundi dehanike poi cherutundi kaani maroka dehaniki poi cheru.
On the basis of meritorious or other deeds which you have performed in this body, the prana leave this and goes to another body which is appropriate for the actions done in this.
కనుకనే మంచి పనులు చేసి మంచి చింతనలను మనం ఆశించి మంచి భావముతో మనం జీవించినప్పుడే మంచి స్థానమును మనం చేరుతాం.
దట్ ఈస్ వై ఓన్లీ వెన్ యూ పర్ఫార్మ్ గుడ్ డీడ్స్, థింక్ గుడ్ థాట్స్ అండ్ హ్యావ్ గుడ్ ఫీలింగ్స్ యూ కెన్ రీచ్ ఎ గుడ్ స్టేట్.
నిమ్మ విత్తులు నాటిన నిమ్మ ఫలమే కరువు.
ఇఫ్ యూ సో ది సీడ్స్ ఆఫ్ లెమన్ యూ కెన్ గెట్ ఓన్లీ ఎ లెమన్ ఫ్రూట్.
మామిడి విత్తులు నాటిన మామిడి ఫలమే పుట్టు.
ఇఫ్ యూ సో మ్యాంగో సీడ్ యూ కెన్ గెట్ మ్యాంగో ట్రీ.
నిమ్మ విత్తనము నాటి మామిడి ఫలము ఆశిస్తే మామిడి ఫలము లభ్యమవుతుందా?
ఇఫ్ యూ ఆస్పైర్ మ్యాంగోస్ ఫ్రమ్ ది లెమన్ సీడ్స్ హౌ కెన్ యూ గెట్?
కానీ మానవుడు అనేక రకములుగా దీనిని చింతిస్తూ ఉంటాడు.
బట్ మ్యాన్ గోస్ ఆన్ థింకింగ్ ఇన్ హిస్ ఓన్ వే.
That was the next clip in that discourse, and I think the sum and substance of what Goswami said was, you know, it is you who decide the reactions that come to you, what you do, what you think, and everything is dependent on that. And Swami was literally giving the signs behind that whole thing, right?
Yeah.
In such a detailed manner.
What is interesting is that you know, when the disciple asks the question, the question actually has almost a pretty, you know, pedantic answer, saying like, this is akasha, this is vayu, you know, various forms of prana, etc. But Swami builds on that, you know. If you notice in the last three questions, at no point of time has Swami failed to take the spiritual, you know, the Vedantic truth has always been expounded, you know, at every stage.
Right.
And not just, you know, going by the commentaries, like most of them will speak on the concepts. Like, for example, Swami has brought up here prana, apana, samana, udana and vyana.
Right.
But Swami keeps taking us back to the divinity present.
Right.
You know, and because of the divinity present, how we should act. And every single question, even in the Keno Upanishad, it was the same thing, right? So we noticed over there that the same thing, like the prana is supreme, and this is how your existence came into being with such sacred principles. Hence you must act according to, you know, your provenance being so sacred. It should be that consistent, your actions.
Right.
And Swami has never failed to, you know, take it all back to that. Not an intellectual exercise, but a more spiritual exercise.
I mean, the beauty is, of course, you know, Swami is not leaving it in the intellectual plane. Swami is explaining it and also drawing it to the point of action. It's saying, you know, how is it connected to everyday life?
Yes.
And, I mean, as you were pointing out, that point which Swami was making is everything is in what you decide to do. And just like how we were talking about that duality of saying that though there seems to be multiplicity, there's actually only duality, right? And Swami was coming to that point of saying that at every moment you have the choice whether you want to act like God or you want to act like a creation, right?
Yes.
And it comes down to that. It's not about a good human being, a bad human being, or better human being, or the best human being.
Yeah.
It's Swami is just saying that every choice is between of God and non-God, you know, almost like that.
Yeah. I think let us also speak about, like, because Swami in various discourses and even in the Upanishad Vahini, Swami has always emphasized on the connections or the mapping, so to speak, between this akasha, vayu, agni,
right,
you know, those aspects, and to the, like, this prana, apana, vyana, udana. So I think we should spend some time dwelling on what are these concepts which are spoken about so much in our scriptures. And here Swami is explaining that how, in response to the question called, like, how do the life forces sustain and protect the life energy, and Swami places the panchabhutas, the five elements, right at the basis of all of this. So Swami says that first you got the akasha, right, and from the akasha, that is the space, right, in which there is space for the universe or creation to arise, right, and in that we have vayu, which is air, and then you got agni, which is fire, we got water, which is apa, and earth, prithvi,
right.
And Swami has often in many discourses he has spoken about from the five elements how the five Jnanendriyas they arise.
Right.
So the Akasha, the ether or space, that gives rise to the sound.
Hearing, right.
Sound. Then we got from air, we get touch. And then from fire, we get the aspect of called form.
Right.
Then from apa, you get taste.
Taste.
And prithvi gives rise to the sense of smell.
Right.
And associated with the Jnanendriyas are the next level, the most. So Jnanendriyas are like the subtle form, and the gross form of corresponding to each one of these Jnanendriyas. You got for sound, you got obviously ear, then touch, skin. Form gives rise to eyes, and then taste, tongue. And the smell, of course, corresponds to the nose. Right. And again, when it comes to the question of life forces, and in this, actually in the Upanishad, in the Prashnopanishad at this stage, they give this example of how the prana is like the queen bee of the human body.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it is like the, you know, prana is there, and all the other senses are like the worker bees. So the human body or the human personality exists as long as the prana resides in the body.
Okay.
This is, we have seen this same principle being spoke about in different analogies.
Mm-hmm.
So in the when we saw in the Kenopanishad, it was described to us by way of the story, right? Of So in similarly over here, they give another example, and here they talk about the prana being like the queen bee. Which once prana leaves, so does everything else. So yet again, it comes back to how the analogy is, it follows the same thing, saying that the senses that they felt that they were supreme, and each one was competing with each other to prove like which is the most supreme. And then the prana asserts like its superiority, right? So here, however, we go deeper into this principle of prana. In fact, Swami says that the life principle, it we see five manifestations of it, and they correspond to different functions of the body. Like the prana corresponds to respiration. Then we've got apana, which corresponds to evacuation.
Actually, one point they generally say is each one of these are also called pranas.
The five pranas, so to speak.
Dhyana prana and udana prana, samana prana, it's called that.
So these are the what are called as the vital airs, and correspond to very important functions of the body. Vyana corresponds to the function of prana, which is circulation.
Right.
Then we got udana, which maintains the heat of the body, and it is like, you know, the outward or, you know, backward pushing force. And then you got samana, which corresponds to the assimilation of food, digestion of food. So they kind of classified the different forces or, you know, the functions that happen in the body, and these are classified according to these pranas. So that is the theory that behind. But these are prevalent everywhere in the Vedanta, everywhere in the scriptures. So it is like worth going through again.
Right.
And again, like Swami has said that udana, like among all this, Swami singles out udana as a force that witnesses the good and the bad that is done by a person and gives him the corresponding reward. So it is like when the life force is leaving the body, in fact in the Ishavasya Upanishad, you know, the person is exhorted that may the good deeds, you know, take you to the destination. And here Swami says that it is the udana that takes you to that particular destination. In fact, there is one very interesting episode, you know, here. Kasturiji, in his book, he records about the then secretary of the ashram, one Mr. Kutumbarao.
Right.
And how, like, he used to, of course, be the secretary of the ashram, and he was like a karma yogi, but at the same time, his knowledge of the Upanishads or the Vedas, it was very profound.
Oh, okay.
And he is saying that in his last days, like, you know, he, although he was in obviously a lot of pain, he was suffering from a terminal disease, and yet his mind was constantly dwelling on God. And Swami came to visit him. He blessed him in his final moments. And after he left, and as he was giving up his body, Kutumbarao, it seems he was chanting the shloka, the last lines of the Ishavasya Upanishad, precisely those lines which talk about how they, Kasturiji observes that what a remarkably evolved individual that must be, who in his final moments he recalls the injunction of the Vedas, let me be taken to my final destination according to the deeds that I have done. It's a very moving episode, which really speaks about the influence that Swami has. He turns each maybe an ordinary individual, but by association with Bhagwan, with constant rumination on his words, by talking about the experiences of people around Bhagwan, that how much it evolves a person.
Right.
It's something very rare to find, in the final moments. You go remembering the good teachings, the sacred teachings that you have been taught, instead of going out in fear or some other emotion.
That's the beauty in the connection which Swami is drawing here. First, in the earlier part of the discourse, Swami explained what the sun stood for, and what is that difference between the Dakshinayana and the Uttarayana, where actions are performed with, in the direction of the source, in heading towards the source. That is the noble way of performing actions.
Right.
And then Swami is bringing to this point where how these life forces inside the body are related to the sun. Because Swami starts off that trip by saying that the prana comes from the sun. Right. And how this prana is actually taking on various functions in the body. And actually, if you look at it, they say that each of these pranas perform a very vital function, like digestion or as we say, circulation. And Swami is talking about the nerve points, the vyana being the thing which flows through the different nerve points or the chakras in the body.
Yeah.
And then there is digestion, which is samana. So in a sense, Swami is saying how your good actions are so directly connected to the health of your body.
Right.
It's not just about good habits and bad habits. It's about noble acts, noble thoughts, noble deeds, how they are so intricately connected to even processes like digestion and breathing. And you see this in many people, at least in the ashram and Swami's devotees. We have seen so many that who live to the age of probably 90 or 95. The only health defects you see in them is just a sign of aging. Right? Just the joints giving up and things like that. But pretty much in very good health.
Yes.
And suddenly at one point, they just shed their body. And I think so many devotees of Swami, we have seen them having such a very, very easy death.
Yes, I remember in Trayi, Swami used to often speak about these devotees like Ram, Ramam, Suraya. Right. Swami used to always point out that those who serve me, they lived a very long age and they live lives of very good
health. Very good health. Right.
Even right now, in our trust office, the person who looks after the accounts, so the finance and accounts of the ashram, Mr. Ramon Rao, he's way past 90. But there's absolutely no evidence of that.
He still comes to work.
Yeah, he comes to work without fail every single day, does his accounts meticulously.
Right.
The one aspect of him is that he's extremely meticulous in his accounting, he doesn't allow mistakes to creep in, and even at this age, he's not given up on that. And every one of his birthdays, he makes it a point to climb up the steps to our office, which is on the first floor. He climbs up, comes and makes it a point to wish each one of us on his birthday.
Okay.
And but his entire life, everything is dedicated to Bhagwan, as we have seen with many. Even the present member secretary of the board of trustees, Mr. Chakravarti.
Right.
If you see him, his mind is very alive. And
we were really surprised. The other day he was here for a recording. And he said he's past 80. None of us could believe it.
In fact, I remember once at the hospital, he had come there for some meeting. And lunch was organized, and suddenly I had this concern that I don't know what is his diet. Is there any restrictions? Absolutely no restrictions, Prem. I mean, touch wood, we pray for his long health. But it was really astonishing. But I think totally because his mind is continually dwelling on the task that Swami has given. Has to be done.
And I don't know. I think there was one discourse which Swami gave. sometime when Swami recalled all of these devotees.
Yes.
As you're saying, Ram Brahmam, Swami recalled the great Kamavadani Garu.
Mm.
He lived almost till the age of 100, I think, and passed away peacefully. In fact, some of these lecturers like Vednarayan sir and Shivshankar Sai sir and Ravikumar sir, they would learn Vedam from him.
Yes.
Right? And that time when they used to go to his room, he was past 90. And he would not have even a helper to sweep the room or wash his clothes. At that age, and even when these boys as students would go to him, he would not allow them to help him with these kind of works. He'll say, no, this is, I have to take care of my body and my things myself. And this he did till the last day of his life. This is how independent he was. And so many such devotees, I think that was the time when Swami spoke about Gopal Rao sir.
Yes.
Saying that, you know, he is also reaching 100. And Swami blessed him. Nautu po, Swami said.
Yes. Yes.
And he said, this is the sign of all great devotees. Swami referred to Mother Ishwarama. How in an instant she passed away. Swami referred to Subbamma. And all of these people, I think. And beautifully, Swami is connecting how noble deeds are nothing but deeds which are going to lead you towards the sun or the Prajapati or the divinity or whatever it is, which is nothing but Uttarayanam, which has been referred to in the Upanishads and the Vedanta, and how the sun is the deity ruling over this prana and the all the other functions. And that's why Swami says it all depends on the good deeds that you're doing.
Right?
Our state of existence depends on our actions.
In fact, just to go back to again the main Prashnopanishad itself, there it speaks about, like, the question also arises, as has arisen earlier, that what is the mechanism through which the prana enters the body?
Right,
we got one animating principle and then there is the inanimate, but what is the process the disciple actually asks the guru, like, how does it enter the body? And the answer that is given is very interesting. It is because of the activities of the mind. It says, like, very clearly that the prana enters because of the activities of the mind. And at the root of it, like, then the question comes, like, what is the mind up to? But the main driving principle is desires.
Right.
And the, you know, unfulfilled desires or aspirations that are there. So that is what the mind drives the mind to create. It says the mind creates the body and then the life principle enters into that body. Right, it is like, so that is the mechanism. So at the heart of it is the desire, right? And even as we say, the Prajapati also, Swami says, Prajapati arises why? Out of the undifferentiated, it arises because of that prime thing called desire. And that is at the base of it all. Right? And, you know, that's why, like, Swami is again, you know, putting us back to that particular, you know, principle of sealing on desires. Make sure that, you know, whatever desires you have, be aware that they have certain limitations. You know, they, you know, so I think that is one of the most important learnings from the fact that the body is, you know, like, how does the body come into being? How does this creation come into being? I think one of the reasons why the question is being asked is that to drive up the answer called, it is all because of desire.
In fact, Professor Venkatraman would beautifully explain about in his favorite topic of how there is so much chaos in the world. He would often say, you know, there are two types of desires. I mean, if you could define them as desires, you say there are the desires of the body and there are the desires of the mind.
Right.
If you stick to the desires of the body, those desires will last only till the body can take it. Right? It's like craving for food and craving for comfort, craving for warmth and all of this. He says the body is built in such a manner that with age, with time, it will automatically start shedding out some of these desires.
Yes.
You will not find that the body seeks the same kind of desires as it grows older. But he says the desires of the mind are incurable. Right, you know, it always wants more than what the body needs.
Right.
Actually, and that's where all the confusion comes. And when Swami says, I mean, as you were explaining, that it's the desires in the mind which actually choose the body, which make these life form enter the body.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. Swami is saying that it's that husk which is on the rise, which compels this process to go on and on again. And that's how it starts.
Yeah, it's like a perpetuating cycle, because as you said, if the desires in the mind, they are not rooted out, like in one phase of existence. If they're not rooted out, it almost guarantees, you know, that we will arise yet again. Like. And these desires are like constant, you know. They like I remember once sitting in the Sai Kulwant Hall, sitting in front of Swami, and you know, there was a music performance that was going on, and I was witnessing like how pleased Swami was at the music performance and the amount of attention that he gave to the singers, the musicians and all that. And I was feeling, you know, like how I wish I had that kind of talent. I could be, you know, as accomplished as these people were. And somehow the train of thought continued from there that I wish I could be accomplished in something, you know, like I had some distinction which would make me stand out of the crowd, and then Swami would pick me up, right? And the basic desire is to get close to Bhagavan.
Right.
On top of that, we layer it with the the other desires. And, you know, somewhere, I was not aware of this. I was thinking these things. All of a sudden, I could literally hear a voice in my head that asked that, supposing we were to take away all these, like, supposing you couldn't be a great musician, although, you know, let's say that you are entitled to it, but you couldn't be a great musician, or say a great physicist or some such desires that cropped in my mind. But what if you could be closer to Bhagavan? You know, what if you could be close to God? And I remember instantly in my mind, in answer to that, I made a choice. I said, I will choose Bhagavan. You know, let all these worldly accomplishments, let it be aside, and I will choose Bhagavan. And this I remember was 2003 or something when this happened. And Swami suddenly, as if, you know, in answer to all this, the thoughts that were going in my mind, he turned towards me, and I could see an emotion, you know, in his face. It was totally, it had nothing to do with whatever was going on, you know, the music performance. He just looked at me suddenly, like as if a sob, you know, like of happiness, of that, you know, like the right choice. It was like affirming that. And that is something, you know, very important for us to hold on to.
Right.
That these desires will crop up, but in the end, the desire for God is what is going to end all other desires.
Exactly. I think, I mean, it's a very, very important point, because especially as devotees, we tend to do this. You know, and we've observed, I mean, I've observed in my mind too. You know, you always, you know what you want, but you're always defining how you want to get it.
Yeah.
And that's where all the problems come. You know, I wish I had this so that I can get Swami's love. I wish I had this so that I can be close to Swami.
Yeah.
And I think at some point you have to stop and say that, you know, this is exactly what I want. If you, even if you take Swami's physical presence out of it and the equation changes, I think, I mean, there is something they say, you know, if you ask five whys, if you want to do something, you ask five whys, you'll land up in happiness, right? I mean, if not in the first or second why, at least by the fifth why, you'll end up by saying that I'm doing this for happiness, or I'm doing this for satisfaction, or something like that. So, instead of asking God for, you know, give me all of this and saying that at the end of it I can be happy, just say, God, something, I want to be happy. Can you give that? I mean, it's almost like that typical bhajan session, you know. You sing 12 bhajans. There's one daya karo, there's one darsha dikao, there's one saying that save the world, give peace and all that. And finally, after all that, you say, loka samastha sukhino bhavantu. You know, I ask for all of these, but at the end of it, I'm asking for happiness, not for me, for everybody, because I can't be happy alone.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, you know, let's cut all the unnecessary details, and this is the final thing to ask for.
Yes. I was recalling another, if you have time, like this, how Swami emphasizes the fact that divinity is present in everyone, and that he is the manifestation of that divinity. I recall one of our lecturers, he had spoken about this in, you know, he shared in one of his speeches in Kulwant Hall. What had happened was that Swami had... This lecturer, one night he had enormous difficulty falling asleep.
Okay.
And he says, like, you know, he went to bed at 10 o'clock just like everybody else. But his mind was constantly tormented by some thought. And almost till midnight he kept tossing and turning, you know, he just could not sleep. He doesn't recall at what point of time he fell asleep. But next morning he wakes up, goes to Darshan, and Swami calls him for an interview. and of Swami is saying something, and then he starts sharing that you know, last night for a very long time he could not sleep. Then I went to bed, I was lying in bed, but I was tossing and turning this way, that way. I just could not sleep almost till midnight. And as Swami was saying this, suddenly, you know, he realized that this was precisely the experience
that he
which had. And he looks up at Swami, and Swami smiles and he says, "Where do you think I am? You know, I exist even in your heart." So that, you know, how Swami is so aware of who he is, right? He doesn't, like, we imagine ourselves to be existing within this physical frame, and so I have a separate existence from Premanush. But as far as Swami, who was so aware of not being limited, you know, as being the life force more than the manifestation of it, you know, like, so he was very conscious of that his identity is not this, or whether there's an identity at all, but the fact that, you know, he could experience what another person was going through, be very aware of it, go through the same you know, experience and talk about it, like, that just shows, you know, what kind of
exactly. I mean, from the thing what you were saying, you know, it all starts with that dehabhimanam. It's not necessarily attachment to a body, but the attachment to the difference.
Yeah,
that strong feeling that I am separate from what is around me. And when Swami was constantly exhibiting that absence of that feeling, that, you know, it automatically exhibits as oneness.
Yes.
But he was able to completely and wholeheartedly relate with everybody and everything and every object that he comes across.
And that we experience as a feeling called love.
Right.
But at the basis of it, like, it is oneness. That being very aware of the fact that he is one with all existence.
Right. Exactly. In fact, in the satsang, it's the same topic we were talking about, where Swami's oneness with even the animals. Interestingly, 20th October this year was celebrated as Save the Planet Day, which is usually the Save the Planet Day every year. The international organization celebrates it that way. But this year it was with special emphasis on loving and caring for animals. So we're talking about how Swami has reached out to even the animal kingdom in ways. It's not just loving and caring. Like, you know, if you and I can care for an animal, it's loving and caring. But the way Swami related to them and made them feel Swami one of them, right? You know, that's what happens when completely that idea of separation goes.
Yeah.
Right? That when that finite feeling goes completely.
Yes, I mean, I think, like, in all the experiences that we have with Bhagwan, lot of what we term as miracles, but I think we must always pause and wonder about them. See, when, like, Swami says something that occurred in your past, in your private past, and Swami is able to relate it to you as if he's completely present there, it's not this one thing to say that, yeah, I'm in the presence of a very miraculous being who has so many unlimited powers. But I think Swami is also pointing out to the fact that you have a mistaken notion.
Right.
You have a mistaken notion that you...
He knows my experience.
Yeah.
You know?
That there is a separation between you and Swami, between you and God. You know, that there is a separate existence. And that actually, you know, if you actually dwell on these experiences from that point of view, I'm pretty sure that the barrier will be broken through. Whatever imaginary obstruction has been created. But just the fact that Swami, through these experiences, is actually knocking at that door.
So I think we'll conclude with that thought. Thank you, Hari. And so, dear listeners, that's this week's Shravanam Mananam Hridayasanam. Most probably we'll conclude this discourse in the next week. And probably we'll even go through a quick summary of whatever Swami said in that discourse. So do join us next week. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. Do join us again next week in the next episode of Shravanam Mananam Hridayasanam.
బడాచితో గిరిధర బాలానంద కిషో.
Isn't that a beautiful melody? Do you want to learn this Sai Bhajan? Tune in to the Asia Stream every Thursday at 6:45 p.m. Starting from November 3, 2016, Radio Sai offers you a new series, The Vintage Sai Bhajan's Classroom.